All right, welcome back to the Jason W. Hoyt Show. It's time to take responsibility for liberty. Thank you guys for tuning in. Today we're going to be doing a profile in courage is what I'm calling this, because I'm going to be interviewing a number of people who are near and dear to my heart who have just an amazing amount of courage to tackle the issues of the day. And my guest today is Alice Linehan, a dear friend, an amazing patriot, a mom, wife, amazing patriot, who has been on the forefront of ringing the bell, raising the flag about the issues with education. And so we're going to dig into Alice's history and what was her awakening. Actually, Alice, let's start there. Thank you so much for joining me today and taking the time.
Thank you. So happy to be on and excited for your next move. And thank you for staying in the battle. We've been in it together a long time.
A very long time. So in early days of social media, I saw this saying, I kind of modified it a little bit, and I use it as my cover photo for a long time. It says, I always wondered why somebody didn't do something about that. Then I realized I am somebody. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that, about getting engaged in the process, your name comes to mind early in that thought as someone who's done so much to get engaged in the process in a thankless mission, because the way you're doing this, the angle that you're using, which is where the devil is in the details and you are in the details exposing the devil's schemes. But enough of that. Let's go back to your moment of awakening. Prior to getting engaged in this whole process, what were you doing?
I was a mom, ultimately. You know, I was your typical stay-at-home Fox News junkie mom. Mm-hmm. I didn't sit around and watch soaps. I sat around and watched Fox News and took care of my kids.
Wow.
And it was interesting because I got my real estate license and I became a realtor. And I joined this platform called Active Rain. Mm-hmm. And I always thought I was engaged in politics because I watched Fox News, I voted. Right. But I watched, but I got involved in Active Ring, and it was the very beginnings of blogging. So,
what time period?
This was early 2000, 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. And I joined this platform for marketing, and you would join different groups under this big real estate umbrella, conservative mom realtors, Dallas-Fort Worth realtors, Republican realtors of DFW. And so I joined all these groups and I started following the blogs, and they got pretty political. But then the Tea Party movement happened.
Right. I was going to say, but before we jump into the Tea Party like that, it's interesting you say that, because in most business or even in school or even different places, they say don't talk religion and politics. And you're saying they had conservative realtors they were getting political.
They were getting political. It was because it was a networking platform. And so you would join, people of like minds to network and sell real estate.
Yeah.
So it was really, it was purely at that point a marketing networking opportunity, but I was politically minded. I wouldn't say I was politically active.
Right.
And then the Tea Party movement happened.
Yep.
And I met people like you and Matt Armstrong, Anita.
Anita Moncrief, yep. Brandon Darby, right?
Brandon Darby, Andrew Breitbart, came into the picture. Yep. And so then I got a little more involved. But the interesting thing with Active Rain was I didn't know how to blog. I'm not a writer. I don't like to write. But I was very opinionated. Mm-hmm. And these blogs started posting information, and because I was involved in the Tea Party movement and talking to people and kind of expanding my vision of what was going on, I got real opinionated. So then I started blogging on Active Brain.
Yeah.
And I started getting pushback.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, because there was a guy that I was debating on the Bushes and President Bush, and I was defending him to no end. Mm-hmm. I was just like, you know, rose-colored glasses for the Bushes. I thought I knew everything because I watched Fox News. And this guy came after me, and I was so mad. I was just blogging, typing. And he said, okay, if you're going to debate with me, at least learn how to use the blog and put paragraph breaks. Because right now it looks like you're yelling at me.
Were you at all caps?
All caps, you know, yeah. And so he really challenged me. I'm so thankful for him. And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to dig a little deeper, do more research to right. defend my position. And when I started doing research, not just opinions, I realized I was wrong, and I had to humbly say to him, I'm sorry, you were right, and I'll join forces with you.
Wow.
And then we kind of created this community within Active Reign that, you know, we would post something, and the left, and you and I have talked about this for years, how they organize, and, you know, they had blogging attackers, and right. they would come in and attack. But, well, then this group would come in and defend me, or I would do the same for others. And I think that really shaped my education on blogging and social media, and how to debate an issue and back your issue up. I think yeah. all of that stemmed from Active Reign. And then I feel like with the network that you and I were in, we'd always, in our kind of group of folks, we didn't always agree with each other, or we didn't always, we always backed each other up. There's people that we've met along the way that would step on one person to get to the higher level. And politics is ugly, and people become very ugly.
Yeah.
But there's a certain group of us that no matter what we were saying or doing, we had the utmost respect, and we would back each other up. And I think that's what really gave me the courage to continue to fight and to do the crazy things that we did.
Right.
And my prayer was always just keep my marriage together, because we were out doing some crazy things.
Well, the time away. I mean, and I want to dig into that in a little bit. But I remember the early days of social media and trying to have conversations. Mm-hmm. I used to have conversations with people, not necessarily debates, but conversations. I would ask questions. You know, Stephen Covey, right? It's the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. One of the first, if not the first, is seek first to understand, then be understood. And trying to understand where people are coming from, what perceptions are they, what baggage are they bringing, or what body of knowledge are they bringing in? Is it complete? What are the definitions of what they're saying? Let's get on the same page here, and then let's have a discussion. And I used to attempt to, and was relatively successful online before people got so rabid, and people say things behind the keyboard today that they never would say to someone's face, but it's so ugly today. Right. But this is early on, so you picked up on the strategies, and you know, on the right, we're fiercely independent. And you're right; there's a lot of people that would step on others to get somewhere else. But let's talk about that media narrative, because I don't even remember exactly when you and I met. Were you was a part of the probably the Dallas Tea Party and Chad and these guys and and Chad Matt Armstrong and all them,
yes.
Oh, Christina Boteri.
Yes. Yes, Christina Botteri. I don't even know where she is today, but
yeah, man, she's on my list of people I'm going to talk to as one of the founders or co-founders, really, of the Tea Party movement. So I'm going to be talking to her. But I think it was at one of her events where I think they said, you need to meet my friend Alice. She's a warrior, you know.
We've just met some really amazing people. That's actually why I stay in the battle and why I have hope.
Right.
Because there are some amazing, very talented, all in different respects, you know, and people who I think saw what was coming early on or were Andrew Breitbart. I mean, I think he was a warrior that brought a lot of us together. To kind of fight the media, if you will.
And knowing someone like that who was in the forefront, because you've been really behind the scenes, and you've got a little research team that's even further behind the scenes, you've been on the front lines within Texas and testifying, and we'll talk about that. But Andrew, you know, the Breitbart.com at the national level, crashing Anthony Weiner's press conference, you know, just he's a happy warrior, but he was a warrior. And so that, because I know that you really picked up on media narrative, establishing the narrative. That was your thing when we did that tour. We'll talk about that. But and a lot of that was probably emboldened from Andrew, right?
Andrew and God love him, Pat Cadell, who took a shine to me early on and worked closely with Andrew. Mm-hmm. And Pat was a hard one to be around and deal with, I think, a lot of people, because he was so smart, and he understood and he knew where all the dead bodies were. Right. He knew the inside outs of the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. And he was your old school Democrat who always said the Democrat Party left him.
Right.
But what was interesting about Pat, I think, and what formed my he was a mentor to me, and he taught me how the left battles. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, there was a time Sheila Jackson Lee made some stupid comment, a congresswoman in Texas, and I got so mad, and I called Pat, and I was like, I can't believe she said this. She's so ridiculous. And Pat goes, well, you Republicans are so stupid. He said, y'all don't know how to fight this battle. Mm. If a Republican had said something as stupid as that, the left would have had a press conference. They would have had 500 people around. Right. They would have made a big deal out of it. And he goes, what do y'all do? Y'all email each other.
Right.
He goes, you don't know how to fight. And so I called Anita Moncrief, our dear friend, and I said, Anita, you've got to meet me in Houston. Pat said we have to have a press conference in Sheila Jackson Lee's district.
Right.
And so we did. And because Anita was there, she got black pastors in Sheila Jackson Lee's district to be at this press conference with us. And we put it on social media and did a big splash. But it was those kind of media content opportunities to know how to create the content, to share the message, to hold these elected officials accountable in their own district among their own people. And that is one thing that Pat was just brilliant at. And he taught me that.
About the strategies of the right, you know, call it Republicans, and the way they fight, if you will.
Right.
And here you are, some local grassroots, not getting paid for this. You're just kind of someone who's engaged in the process, and you take the initiative to do that. It wasn't the party establishment. It wasn't, because you're right, they probably just emailed each other, or they just used that little clip and did a fundraising video or a fundraising email about it.
Right.
You know.
It wasn't actually about making change or making a difference.
Right.
For us and with Women on the Wall and Rebecca, who founded Women on the Wall, we have always held strong to the belief that what we do is about making a difference. Mm-hmm. If we're doing it to raise funds for Women on the Wall, it negates the whole purpose.
Right.
And we were running in circles with a lot of organizations that did a lot of fundraising. We met a lot of great, you know, funders. I shouldn't say great funders. We met a lot of funders.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
But when we started actually talking about the education issue, we became the enemy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
we'll transition into that. But
yeah,
it's interesting, like the your organization, when you guys formed that, did you do the 501c4? Did you do the IRS filing and all that? Were you part of that attack, you know, how they singled out people? And
Women on the Wall formed, I think, separate of that. It wasn't, it was formed, actually, Rebecca formed it to fight the pornography coming into through technology early on through cartoons and different things. She saw that, and she was involved in the national security issues on the border. And so she formed that, and then I met her, and then we formed a coalition. And with Women on the Wall, we really covered three issues: immigration, national security, and education. Wow. And how they intersect, but my wheelhouse is really the education piece.
Mm-hmm. Now, why did you pick that? Is it because at the time you had, you know, kids in schools? It kind of
It happened organically. I was involved in the Tea Party movement. We were having a big event down in Austin, and to battle against the Speaker of the House in Austin. And we put together an event, Matt Armstrong and myself and others. But at that time, there was a curriculum management system that was coming into light, as it was called C-Scope. I didn't really know anything about it. A friend of ours that we asked to come down to this conference gave a talk on it, Ginger Russell, and her mother really exposed it. And that really launched me deeply looking into education, because C-Scope was coming into my own children's school district. And so I started digging, researching, and battling it in my own school district. And that curriculum management system was really the precursor or the pilot to Common Core. I didn't really know what that was at the time. And that's really what opened up Pandora's box for me is in fighting it in my own children's school district and then uncovering it.
So what did you see when you uncovered, when you did the little research? How many layers did you have to go? Was it, what did you see that was like, hang on a minute, I thought that education was about this, and this is, was it a topics or was it the approach? What did you see that raised?
It was a curriculum management system that controlled what teachers were doing in the classroom. So if you can control the assessments, you can control the curriculum. And the assessments and the curriculum are based on standards. And that's when I started to understand what the Common Core national standards were. And that Texas, even though we passed a law saying we're not going to have Common Core, we didn't need Common Core because we were piloting the first program. It's just, it was just rebranded and called College and Career Readiness Standards. And so when you understand the bigger picture of standards, assessment, and curriculum, that's used to control the outcomes of our kids, it takes complete power away from a teacher and a school district if the state is mandating it. And with Women on the Wall, once I started taking that journey, and because I had the background with the Tea Party movement and Active Rain, narratives mattered, and getting people engaged mattered. But how did you do that when the media was completely against you?
Right.
And so what with Women on the Wall, we started a campaign of asking parents to go into their children's classrooms, all classrooms, public, private, charter, homeschool, curriculum, and ask three questions. Can I see what you're teaching my child? Can I see how you're teaching my child? Can I see, what are the instructional materials? What is the professional development? And number three, can I see who's financially benefiting from the curriculum products on which my child's teacher is evaluated? And when you take that, when you ask those three questions and you take that journey from can I see what you're teaching, which is really a weak position, to I can't see. I can see what you're teaching, I can see how you're teaching, and I can see who's financially benefiting, and it's not my child, and it's not my child's teacher. And that campaign, we still, that whenever I go to speak to groups, that I still use that campaign, call to action, if you will. And I know we're going to talk about that at the end, but taking parents and taxpayers on that journey from can I see to I can see is how we have found we've been able to build an army, if you will, of parents who've taken that journey, and they're willing to stand up and fight back and go testify and expose what's actually happening.
I feel like, especially lately with the COVID, the medical community, usually you have this relationship with your doctor. It's between you and your doctor. But we're realizing that behind the doctor, there's this entire industry that is has grown and grown and grown and is now dictating what essentially what that doctor can and cannot say. And I feel like it's that way in education. You think you've had this parent-teacher conference. You think it's between you and your teacher. You think it's your teacher has, you know, has a say in any of this. And that's the only person you really have access to is your teacher. But there's this entire industry that has been growing and growing and growing and is trying to tell them what they can and cannot do. And it's, I want to hear about some of the pushback you've gotten as you've been, you know, ringing the bell on this, because I feel like Republican versus Democrat, it's like some of them, the way they fight is, as long as the Republicans are in control, we're going to be okay. And my position is, I don't want to be controlled. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, both sides are complicit. And both sides, frankly, have been paid off by the can I see who's financially benefiting.
Right.
Both sides of the aisle. And that's one thing that Pat Caddell taught me. It's not Republican versus Democrat. They want you fighting that, as that's kind of the shiny ball, because both sides under the in the Capitol in Austin or in Washington or whatever state capital you're talking about, that they're working together. And it's interesting because when we started fighting this battle and building this army, we talked to moms and dads. I don't care what your political beliefs are. You still want your kids to learn how to read, write, and do math well.
Right.
And so the army that we've built has not been based on Republicans versus Democrats.
Right.
But moms and dads and taxpayers.
So how do you approach a mom or a dad? Because a lot of the vast majority of people for the longest time just make this assumption. They assume they drop their kids off at this place. It's called a public school. We just assume We drop them off. And then do you ask them questions about the the curriculum? Do they even have an idea that there's a body, that there's people competing for who's for writing their, that curriculum?
I mean, right. They, 10 years ago when I started in this battle and really understanding what was going on, people thought it was crazy.
Right.
And in my own community, people thought it was crazy. Now those people are saying, well, maybe that lady's not so crazy.
Right. And, I remember, tell me if you remember this story. I remember going to an event, and I think it was with Chad some weekend, flew in, and you had some meeting, and tell me who that was with. It was an elected official, I think, in the state level, but they were, I remember him saying, what are you talking about? Common Core is illegal here in Texas. And you said, do you have, you know, you pulled out a math textbook. You said, and he's like, yeah, that's my daughter's or our son's or whatever. You know, open it up. Do you remember this story? I forget who it was. I don't know if you remember who that was, but that was so telling because all of a sudden it says Common Core standards. He's going, what?
What? Yeah. People don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And that's, it's interesting because when you start digging and looking at the research of who's behind all of this, and you look at their documents and read their books, they clearly lay it out. Right. And there was a guy in 1976, I believe it was, and his name was Turchinko, and he wrote a letter about the scientific technological takeover of education in America. And he laid out the blueprint of all of this.
Wow.
And he said in it that this will be implemented and people will not even realize it until it's too late.
Wow.
Interesting about that letter, there was a letter, and I should know, it'll come to me in a minute, but written to Hillary Clinton. And it's called Mark Tucker wrote it. It was the Dear Hillary letter, and it lays out the blueprint for the takeover of the healthcare and education system.
Mm.
And you look at that Dear Hillary letter and Turchinko's blueprint, and they completely line up.
Wow.
And interesting, if you think about healthcare and Hillary Care, Obamacare, it was an individual mandate to have healthcare.
Right.
In education, it's an individual mandate to come under the Common Core standards.
Yeah, I remember
it's the same exact blueprint.
Sorry to interrupt there, but did they talk about in that plan using some sort of financial crash or issue or something like that as an opportunity to get this in there? Because I remember with the 2008 financial crash, a lot of property value, the real estate crash, property values came down, and all of a sudden property tax assessments went down and school boards weren't getting the money. And so I remember they were, Tea Party people were raising this issue saying, here you can get this, what do you call this, race to the top or some sort of financial
thing from the top.
And then buried in there was, this was before Common Core really was established, and they said buried in the details was you can get this money for your local property taxes and school board if you accept Common Core when it comes out. The devil's always in the details.
In the details, exactly. That's exactly right. It's the bait and switch.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same currently with the ESSER funds. Which, you take federal dollars. And that's where, when we started taking this journey and understanding the federal and state laws that have already been passed, and you look at, I want to tell a story because you'll appreciate this. And I think it helps to understand. And when I talk to groups, I always tell this story. But do you remember, and I think you were with me, when Brandon Darby was giving his testimony or talking about how the left organized to bomb the Republican National Convention in the green, yellow, and
the
people.
Yep, the different colors, yep.
the different colors. So the green people that were, they were just busting them there to hold protest signs. They weren't doing, they were Democrats that they bust there. They weren't doing anything bad or illegal. Then you had the yellow people, a little more radical, a little more in the know, and they were bust there to hold PVC pipe to hold back the police. Mm-hmm. The green people didn't know about the yellow people. Then you had the red people. They would throw the Molotov cocktail or throw the bomb. Right. I was meeting with an education service center director here in Texas. We have these service centers. And this director was trying to tell me how wonderful C-Scope was. And I said, Dr. Stillman, you and I are going to have to agree to disagree because I've done a lot of research and I don't agree that it's a good curriculum management system. And I said, but let me tell you a story. And I told him about Brandon Darby and the green, yellow, and red people. Mm-hmm. And I said, Dr. Stillman, I don't think you're a bad guy. I think you're green. How you put food on your children's table is you go to a conference and you learn the latest and greatest 21st century learning program. And then your job is to come back to my children's school district and rent or sell them a curriculum management system that at best is harming them, at worst is indoctrinating them. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you're bad, I think you're green. And there's a lot of green people out there, whether they're in education, yeah, whether they're teachers, administrators, or elected officials.
Right.
They don't realize they're being completely controlled by the red people.
Right.
I went and testified 2 weeks ago in front of in Austin against some legislation, the school choice legislation, and of course I only had 3 minutes, and so I told him the green, yellow, and red story.
I watched that,
and I said, my question is, are you green, yellow, or red?
Right.
They didn't ask any questions afterwards, but I think that people are beginning to understand who the red people are.
Yeah.
The challenge is, you know, kind of like I had to do when I was, money.
There's a lot of money. There's a lot of money behind
There's a lot of money, and there's a lot of ego. And, you know, when I first started with blogging and I was defending the Bushes,
mm-hmm,
and I was wrong, I had to humbly submit and say, I was wrong. We need people who are elected officials, our school administrators, our school board members, our teachers, to understand they're being controlled by the red and they need to humbly submit that they were wrong,
right,
and join forces to protect. And I think that 10 years ago, people said I was crazy and that could never happen. Now, I think it is so in our face. It's so in our face that it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. There's things happening that are so but beyond the pale. I mean,
right,
so crazy.
Yeah.
And so I think that those of us who've been in this battle for so long, and there were people before us who mm-hmm. were battling.
Right.
And that's where I had a lot of my aha moments in this education, understanding what was happening. You know, I had Pat Goodell, he just knew what was going on. There are people like Charlotte Iserby who wrote books about this. She just passed away this last year. I think she was in her late 80s. She was fighting against this in the 60s, 70s. And when you read her books, she completely lays it all out.
Right.
And
I mean, it's got to be a difficult battle to be against, but what are you for? Because what is the right answer? Meaning, and we're going to dig into school choice in just a second because that's a whole other issue.
Right.
But it's like, okay, you're against these things, but how should it be done? How should my kids be educated? And so there's this picture perfect thing here, and anything outside of it, we should be able to recognize that that doesn't belong inside there. And so how should it be done?
Well, I think fall back to our Constitution, to what built the greatest country in the world, the greatest economic power in the world. We put a man on the moon using big, cheap tablets.
Right.
And so I think that we have a foundation to go back to. And that, I always tell the story about my uncle who invented the first shrimp peeling machine that revolutionized the seafood packing industry.
Wow.
He dropped out of college. He was a brilliant, brilliant mind. And he worked at my grandfather's shrimp factory. They would pay the pickers to pick the shrimp by the bucket. And my grandfather told him, if you want to get rich someday, figure out a way to peel these shrimp. So he went home and he got my grandmother's old crank washer, and he put the shrimp through it to see if it would peel the shrimp. And the first time it smushed it, and they calibrated the rollers, and then the shrimp popped out. So he and my grandfather and my uncle spent 2 years developing a machine that would peel the shrimp. Totally revolutionized the seafood packing industry. They're still manufacturing that machine out of Metairie, Louisiana today. Employed countless people, revolutionized the seafood industry in other countries because you could peel little bitty shrimp and can it, fed countless people. He invented, it's called the LePere stair. His last name is LePere. He tried to figure out how to do a ladder that was safer. Instead of going straight up, it would do steps like a stair. If you look at the golf tournament this past weekend, on the back of the scoreboard, there's a ladder. It's the LePere stair.
Really?
When my uncle died, he had over 130 patents.
Wow.
And I asked people, would he have been that successful? By the way, that's what paid to put me through college was my mom's share of the family money. But would he have been able to do that in the Soviet Union?
Right.
Because, or even today, because today our education system is based on the Soviet model. At the end of, in Texas and in other states too, but at the end of eighth grade, we have to decide what you're going to be when you grow up. And we're just going to educate you down that pathway. That's part of the plan of globalization. It's to equalize America and the world, and you stifle that entrepreneurial spirit. You take down those people like my uncle, or you take over his patents, and someone else is making money off of it.
Yeah.
And another interesting note, his best friend was Louis Saya, who saw the shrimping machine built, but then they had to figure out a way to take shrimp from point A to point B in a refrigerated truck. So Louis Saya invented the first refrigerated truck.
Wow.
That kind of entrepreneurial spirit is being stolen from us through this education system.
Yeah.
And I think that when we look at solutions, we have to look back at our foundation and get back to, you know, what we know works, what is developmentally appropriate to teach our children at young ages. If you teach a child to do math well, have a foundation, one concept builds on the next. then you've given that child, I don't care if he's black, white, rich, or poor, you've given that child an opportunity at success in life because you've given him the foundation of math. You've given him the foundation of how to read well and write well. Mm-hmm. In doing that foundation, we create a society of entrepreneurs or people who, you know, God calls us to different roles.
Right.
God calls us to different roles. The government doesn't call us to different roles. God right. does. And we need to go back to that foundation.
I remember a recent video, Dr. Jordan Peterson, I forget who he was talking to, but he talked about the model. And it was the model of the Industrial Revolution, creating workers sitting in a row, the bell ringing in the time of day, and getting you to, maybe that's discipline and this kind of stuff, but to get used to that worker's bell to work in the factory. And what you're saying is the advancement of, because I can hear a lot of people who would debate you and say, you know, Alice, at what previous decade did we do it right? Was it before that 1976 letter? You know, and so you're saying that we should just go back to the 70s, and what about all the advancement in technology? And what you're saying is if you teach people how to think, not what to think, they can then apply it to the technologies that they're learning, but you got to get that foundational stuff in there first. And also, I think also what you've spoken a lot about is, it's like through the education system, they pick early on through technology, through tracking, through your development, through, you know, grade school and what you end up being good at, or you're better at this, better at that. And then based on the demand from Microsoft, based on the demand from the big corporations, based on what they need, they will then take the people who are over here, and when you get into high school, and they'll start to shape their curriculum for them so they can produce good workers. They're producing good workers, not good thinkers. Is that what you would say?
Exactly. Well, and in the past, our education system was a kindergarten through 12th grade system where you graduated in 12th grade and you were free. You're free to go down a vocational path. You were free to go to college. College actually meant something. Mm-hmm. But you had free will. Now we're in what they call a P20W system, preschool through the workforce. Actually, in the UNESCO documents, it's prenatal through the workforce. We're going to start tracking. Yeah. But now understand this. P20W stands for the workforce. So we're no longer this kindergarten through 12th grade system.
Right.
Our workforce must align to the college and career readiness standards in the Every Student Succeeds Act, because you'll hear the term, we're now lifelong learners.
Wow. Yeah.
So when you go to get your real estate license, when you go to get any continuing education for your corporation, you come under these college and career readiness standards that are behavioral standards. Right. We've shifted our education system away from reading, writing, math, and history to values, beliefs, and behaviors.
Whose values, who beliefs, and whose behaviors?
Exactly. And it's all about equity. And right. instead of equal outcomes and equal instead of equal opportunity, it's about equal outcomes. Mm-hmm. And that's where we've lost our way. And so, and I keep going back, I think that we have an opportunity, because it's so in our face,
right,
that people are waking up. You know, my children have seen me fight this battle. They know that there's a battle, and mom and dad are out fighting it. Your precious daughter is going to know that her dad is out fighting for what's right and giving her that foundation.
Yep.
The more people that we can get to see it, to take that journey from can I see to I can see, that's where I think the hope lies.
Yeah.
And we're not going to legislate our way out of this. We're not going to elect someone to save us.
Right.
We've got to save ourselves. And the more people that I think can see it, you know, I would love to elect people who would take this journey and humble themselves to see it.
And put the government and put the government back inside the Constitution.
Exactly. That. Yeah.
But once they get elected, they're like, well, I have to win re-election. And the only way to do that is to get dollars. And these guys are donating to me. And
yeah, I heard it described as the Iron Triangle. You have the elected official, and then on the other side, you have the legislative committees, the unelected bureaucrats writing all the rules and the regulations. On the bottom side, you have the funders who are funding the triangle, and it's an iron triangle. And once you get elected, you get sucked into that iron triangle. Mm. And it's very hard to break that and to get out of that. You know, I don't know that we can do that. It's interesting. There was a video I heard, and they were talking about how the left organizes, and and they said, you know, don't depend on, at the time of this video, Obama to fix things. He's not going to fix things. We have to fix things at the local level. At the city council, he said, don't try to have access to the people you don't have access to.
Right.
Go directly to the people that you do have access to, city councils, mayors, school boards.
Right.
And fight back at that local level, and take back your constitutional rights.
Well, your constitutional protections.
Protections. Right. Yes.
What? It's always been fascinating when I talk to folks in Texas who are really railing on their school boards, going to their local, you call it an ISD. And because I've never heard this anywhere else in the country, but you call them ISD. It's the whatever the, what is your local one that I always see you post about?
Independent school districts.
Independent school. Why aren't they independent? Why would you call yourself an independent school district? There's a reason why it's an independent school district. So act like it. But they're not.
They're not. I will tell you that right now there are some school districts here who are pushing back and fighting. I would be watching Southlake ISD. We have some great school board members. In my own school district where my family lives, we have two races, four people running. All four of them are good candidates. Great. I like all four of them. And so I think that people are waking up. It's interesting, and I know it's set up different in different states, but there's a lot of the same type of organizations that control everything. In Texas, we have the TEA, Texas Education Agency, and our commissioner, Mike Morath, is not a good guy. I told him the green, yellow, and red. He wanted to meet with me, and I said, I would love the opportunity to meet with you, but when I'm speaking to groups and I talk about you, I describe you as yellow bordering on red. So I would love to meet with you and be proven wrong, so I can go out publicly and tell everyone I'm wrong, and he wouldn't meet with me.
Wow.
So, but he, when you look at who's funding him and how he got groomed to be in his position to execute all of these no-bid contracts that are completely opening up our children to technology and the whole data tracking. Mike Morath is key in that. He has no background in education. He's a software, supposed software entrepreneur.
Right.
So you've got the TEA, then you've got TASA, the Texas Association of School Administrators, and they do all the training and professional development for our administrators. They were given a $6 million grant from Bill Gates to implement online digital learning into the classroom.
Wow.
Then you have TASB, the Texas Association of School Board, that does all the professional development and training of our school board members. TASA and TASB just had a conference a couple of months ago, and they had as their some of the speakers at their convention were attorneys on how to implement equity and the LGBTQ into our schools and how to train school board members on how to implement those policies at the local level. Wow. So then you have the education service centers who do the professional development for our teachers and our schools on how to implement the standards that in Texas they're called the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills that are basically the Common Core aligned federal standards because we mm-hmm. took the federal dollars. So you've got those key entities that keep that school district from truly being independent.
Right.
Well, in Texas right now, we have legislation in the works to defund TASA and TASB from being, they lobby against us. So they use our tax dollars to go down to Austin to lobby against us. So there's legislation to stop that connection. But then at the local independent school district level, we have school districts that are not funding, are pulling their alignment with TASA and TASB. If we can get that rolling, I think that's one step closer into bringing back that independent school district.
Right.
Saying, we don't need you.
We are so independent. There's a reason why they named them independent school districts to begin with. If I was given 3 minutes for one of these, meetings, I would just talk about that and remind them who they are. We call you independent school districts for a reason.
Yes. Yeah, you represent us. You are a locally elected, and really, when you look at the bigger picture of the red people, they truly are. It's a revolution through education. Mm-hmm. Revolution meaning taking us away from a constitutional republic to a democracy, and we are not a democracy.
Amen.
We are a constitutional republic, and there is a big difference. A big difference.
Very big. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution guarantees in every state of the Union a republican form of government. Anyways.
That's right.
Tell me about your fight with tell me about your fight with school choice right now. Because, hey, the big school choice movement is sweeping the country. It's like, this is the answer. This is what we've all been waiting for. We want the vouchers. We want the school choice. We, the parents, mm-hmm. want to be able to take them out of the public schools because it's all bad, right? And we want to be able to tell them where we want them to go. School choice is great, but Alice says...
Number one, I do not get the right to educate my children the way that I see fit from the state or federal government. That is an inalienable right that I have been given by God, and it is my duty as a parent to educate my children the way that I see fit from God.
Right.
To say that I need federal or state laws passed to regulate my choices means that I'm handing my rights over to the state.
Yes.
That is unconstitutional. That is not right. And that's not where I get my rights. And so when you look at the big picture and you read the Red People's documentation, mm-hmm. where Common Core came from, UNESCO, the UN education arm,
right?
You understand that the goal is to have access to all students, private school students, homeschool students. They want access.
Yep.
Government regulated school choice gives them the access point to all of us.
Right.
To all of our children.
We've been to this dance before. We've seen this movie before. you know.
Yes.
It's like it's asking the government to take over something which is a natural right. And it's saying, it's like the word license. The word license is making legal what is illegal. And I've been saying this to the religious right for a long time about marriage licenses. Mm-hmm. And for 40 years, the religious right has been going along the path of, please, government, define marriage the way God defined thousands of years ago. It's like God defined it between a man and a woman a long time ago. That's what marriage is. He defined it. We are not asking the government. It's like they're here, government, take something that God defined and put it in your own definition. We'll trust that you'll never change that definition down the road, and then sell us our right back with a license that we have to apply for and pay money for.
Exactly right. It's just like this Title IX business. It's interesting because Title IX was when used for federal dollars to come back to the states. And under Title IX, you can't discriminate based on sex. We think that means male and female.
Right.
Well, under Obama, he changed the rules and regulations. He didn't change the law. He changed the rules and regulations to say that you can't discriminate based on sexual preference.
Right.
And now Biden's taking it one step further.
Right.
And saying you can't define it based on gender, what you feel like your gender is.
Right. Today. Right. It's this slippery slope. It's a slippery slope. And people like you, oftentimes people like me, but definitely you with the education, you can see the trend of where these things are going and you raise your hand early.
Yes.
It's like in 1913. 1913 was a very bad year for America. The 16th Amendment, the direct taxation of income, the 17th Amendment, the direct election of senators, and the Federal Reserve were all created and ratified and passed in 1913. I'm sure, I don't know what in the world they were thinking when they amended the Constitution for the 16th Amendment for the direct taxation of income. What did they tell the people? Oh, don't worry. We're just going to tax the top 1% and the tax rate will only be, you know, 3% at the most. Don't worry. Here we are a century later, 73,000 pages of tax code. It's a mess and taxation is theft.
It is.
So you can see where this stuff goes. Don't worry. This is school choice. You're going to be able to choose wherever you want the dollars to go. Isn't that great? But we're going to define all the terms.
Yeah. Well, not only are we going to define the terms, we're going to define what those choices are.
Right.
All your choices come under the federal mandates. It's interesting because 1994 was a key year that federal dollars came back to the states for education. Before that, 1965, there was a bill called the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. That's where federal dollars came back to the state to teach economically disadvantaged children how to read. Today, that was in 65, today, economically disadvantaged children cannot read, and now economically advantaged children cannot read. And so that bill was reauthorized again under the Bushes and called No Child Left Behind.
Right.
At that time, it was illegal to have a national database on students. And so what they did is they set up 50 separate longitudinal database systems, because now we can't leave any child behind. So we've got to test them and collect data on them to make sure we're not leaving any behind.
Wow.
That bill was reauthorized again under Obama and called the Every Student Succeeds Act. That bill was thousands of pages long. Mm. No one read it because it was released and then the next day they all voted on it.
Right.
It mandates college and career readiness standards and data to be collected on college and career readiness standards. So in Texas, they'll say, well, we don't have Common Core, but in Texas, we took federal dollars. And so our Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, which they call College and Career Readiness Standards, are aligned to the federal mandates of the Every Student Succeeds Act. There's one other bill that I want to just tell you, because I think it's important. It's called WIOA, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. And that was passed before ESA under Obama also. And what it does is it binds education under the Department of Labor, Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Defense, and Department of Education.
Wow.
So we could get rid of the Department of Education tomorrow, and it would not matter, because right. we have federal dollars coming back to the states. So in Texas, we had a big push for all these school safety and mental health bills through education. Well, those are funded through HHS. They've medicalized our education system.
Right.
They create the problem,
mm-hmm.
and then they come in with the solution. And the solutions, the red people are making a lot of money off of the solutions. And the globalist, it's equalizing America economically in the world.
But don't you think kids, but Alice, don't you want kids ready for college? Don't you want them ready for the workforce? What's so wrong with that?
Interestingly, our daughter was the only child in 2015 that her parents wouldn't allow her to have a district issued Chromebook. And because I knew what all was going on, and that was early on. So when I went to my school board, right. I said, what would it look like for my child if I didn't allow her to have this? And they said, well, it would be a little really hard, because she would have to take notes and use pen and paper. And I said, oh, well,
wow.
That's what we'll do. So then she went to college, and she said, thank God my mom made me do that, because I could go to college and sit and take notes and listen to a lecture. And her brain was developing. It was developmentally appropriate. The eye-hand coordination, the using the pen, writing the paper, writing the notes. That's what makes children college and career ready. Not a computer program that's modifying their values, beliefs, and behaviors. One other quick story. So she goes to college, and she's in a business ethics class. And the professor said, have you ever had a situation that you thought was unethical in the business world? And she said, well, my mom wouldn't allow me to have a district-issued Chromebook, because she said that every keystroke, every paper, everything that I put into that computer was my intellectual property, and I wasn't being paid for it. And a third party had access to it to create software programs to sell back to my school district.
Wow.
And like, yay, she listened.
Mic drop. What did his jaw drop?
Yeah. He was like, okay, yeah. But
okay,
you know,
next?
Think about that next.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're doing. They're stealing our children. Our children's data is their greatest commodity.
Yeah.
And our children are their product.
Yeah.
And their data is the commodity.
And they're using it. They're using it not to benefit the child, but to figure out a different way to maneuver the child.
Right. Exactly.
Manipulate,
exactly.
If you will, but
manipulate. Yeah. Keep
wow.
them in line. So I know my daughter wants to be in line.
Yeah.
She's with me. She's a fighter like me. So
well
thank
done.
God.
That is awesome. What else is going on with the school choice then? So where is this in Texas, and where is this with your lonely battle?
Well,
from the outside, you're seemingly lonely battle.
Yeah.
But.
Well, the Democrats, thank God, last week in the House passed a bill, amendment into a bill to say that state dollars can't be used for private schools or private education services.
Right.
That passed. That doesn't mean a whole lot, because there's all other bills that are coming through. The Senate passed a bill, Senate Bill 8. We were down there testifying against it. Governor Abbott is either red or funded completely by the Reds. And he has said that this is his main issue, that he'll go into extra session to get school choice passed, which should tell you something. But there are people waking up. We have people going down to testify tomorrow. I'm going to be in the background creating video of those testimonies in real time and tweeting out and getting information out. We're putting a lot of pressure on our elected officials, trying to get them, if they're green, to see the bigger picture. Right. So it's a battle, but we're going against great forces and huge amounts of money. And both sides of the aisle are complicit in it. We also have to understand, usually when you look at the big picture of the red people, and they have their documents that, 2036 vision, America, and that came out of America 2000. When you look at their documentation, school choice is just a tactic. It's the access point to the students. Right. The other legislation that we're fighting is funding for the virtual schools and online learning. Because if you think about what they're trying to do is to destroy our traditional public school system with locally elected school boards that could actually push back and say no. They want to eliminate them, school choice, and bring in these virtual schools. And the model shows these 21st century learning centers. So if you think of it like a wheel, and the hub is the 21st century learning center, so the kid will just go in to use the computers, basically, for their virtual learning. And then off the hub are the spokes, and you have your medical, you have your extracurricular activities, but everything's controlled in the hub.
Yeah.
And that's what education in America, the goal of the red people is complete control, complete control. And so we're fighting school choice, but we're also fighting this virtual learning education. And that's what Mike Morath, the commissioner of education, he was put in his position to bring in during COVID, he executed a no-bid contract for a $50 million software program called Amplify that is basically a curriculum management system to control teachers and what's coming in through the computer. Well, that was just the precursor. So now he's back asking for more money. And so that in states across America, people need to be looking at the virtual learning that's coming in.
Wow.
When you think about it, an algorithm is an opinion written into code.
Right.
So whoever's writing the algorithm controls the outcome.
Right.
And that eliminates complete free will.
Yep.
Or independence. And that's 19 Turchinko's letter. The scientific technological takeover of America. The blueprint was laid out.
I want you to send that to me. I want to include that in the show notes for this.
I will.
So let's dig into solutions. As you know, I talked about I'm planning the Save America Summit, and I'm asking everybody name at least three solutions that you think that we, the people, need to do here in America.
Number one, I think, is take that journey. Use that campaign in your local community with yourself, with moms and dads, and take that journey. Cannot go into your schools and ask, can I see what you're teaching? Can I see how you're teaching? And can I see who's financially benefiting? And when you create a group of people in your own community taking that journey, You have a force to be reckoned with in your local community, because people don't believe what I tell them. They believe what they tell themselves. And so you have to take that journey. But you have to understand that when you're jumping into this and you start uncovering things, people are on different paths, or not different paths, in different points in the right. on that journey. And some are green, yellow. And so you have to, in your local community, you have to know your audience. And you have to back your opinions up with facts and research. And so that's where content like you're creating, the programs that you're creating, are so key. The work that I've done over the last years through Voices in Power, Women on the Wall, creating that local network of people who've taken that journey, I think is number one and key.
Yeah.
And then number two, look at your the structure of the education industrial complex, if you will, in your own state. Mm-hmm. And once you've built that group of people who've taken that journey, then you fight back, because you know who that industrial complex is. For instance, in Texas, we know that there's DEA, TASA, TASB, and the Education Service Centers. If we can work together to defund those trade organizations and those entities, we can take back local control. So wow. I think that's one and two. And actually, that's two and three. Number one is take care of your own family. What it looks like, what education looks like for your child is completely different than what it looks like for my child. Don't put them in a box. And understand, and it could be different from child to child in the same family like it is with mine. Mm-hmm. And so get your own house in order first. And understand your God-given right and call is to protect your own children. And whether that's pulling them out to homeschool, whether that's, you know, finding the best education opportunity, but understanding the bigger picture of how all of those choices are being controlled, you have to teach your kids, give them the foundation and teach them that this big system is in place and how to navigate it through. Mm-hmm. And so I think number one is your own home. Number two is your community. And number three is to fight the bad guys.
Right.
Fight the red people.
Wow. I love that. That's good stuff right there. I can't tell you how much I appreciated this and needed this, because we haven't really connected in a while. How do people get in touch with you or follow what you're doing?
The best place is on Voices in Power, empower.com. Mm-hmm. That is my website, and I can keep that continuously going. Mm-hmm. And then womenonthewall.org, that's the organization that we battle using, Rebecca Forrest and I. She founded it. Yeah. And so when I go and testify in front of our state legislators or our school boards, I testify with Women on the Wall. And with Women on the Wall, we cover three issues: immigration, national security, and education. And one of the things that we did is, over the years, it was probably 7 years, we would have communication team calls. And so that's how I learned a lot of this, was by having experts and different people from across the country come on our communication team conference calls to expose this. Mm-hmm. So all of that information over all these years, people can find on Women on the Wall. So we're out there. But I encourage people to do the research themselves and build their own own little army locally.
Yeah, and ask questions.
Ask questions, yes. Lots of questions.
Absolutely, because people just make the assumption, I drop my kids off, and I assume those people in that building are doing the right thing. And oh, goodness gracious. So now I hope, I'm sure people understand when I say that I saw this years ago. I always wondered why somebody didn't do something about that. Then I realized I am somebody. That is Alice Linehan personified right there. That's awesome. I appreciate you. I appreciate you, my friend. God bless you. God be with you. God be with your family and your community.
Same to you, Jason. So good to see you.
As well. Please stay on. I'm going to hit end.
Okay.